Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a problem with Catholic moral teaching? This is your opportunity to sound off or ask a question about it. Why do you reject Catholic morality is our topic today. My name's Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett, doing my best to fill in as Cy travels around on the Catholic Answers cruise, having a great time, I am sure. Trent Horn is with us for both hours. Trent, of course, is one of the most popular. Let's just call it that, right, Trent? The most popular apologist here on Catholic Answers. You hear him a lot, and he's a author of many, many books. Trent Horn, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. I would say I'm definitely the most popular, but I would add an asterisk to that when Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Michelle Arnold, and Peggy Fry are not available, and this offer does not apply in Alaska or Hawaii, only in the contiguous United States.
That is a good qualification. So, Trent, I've been perusing your latest book. It's fantastic. It's called Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. In fact, let me show everybody who's streaming on Facebook and Twitter and wherever else we stream it. Great book, and I like the positive approach you're taking to this thing, Trent. Was that your goal going in, present a more positive case?
Well, certainly. I mean, the gospel in Greek literally means the good news of Jesus Christ, the good news of God's plan of salvation for the whole world. And so I wanted to share with people, here's why we're Catholic, here are the reasons, and this is good news. Now, certainly in order to appreciate good news of salvation, one has to become familiar with bad news of sin and despair, things like that. But I don't think it's good to dwell on that unnecessarily. So this book presents just a joyful explanation of how the Catholic faith is true, it's reasonable, it's good, and there's a beauty to it exemplified in people like the saints who have lived it out.
Well, this is a bit of, a revelation maybe to some people, especially when it comes to Catholic morality, and that's our topic for today. Why do you reject Catholic morality? And just to clarify what we're asking for there, we don't necessarily want questions about why, you know, your brother-in-law or somebody rejects Catholic morality. If you are either a Catholic who rejects some aspects of church teaching, or you're not a Catholic, and one of the reasons you're not is that you can't stomach certain aspects of that morality, this is the show that we're asking for you to call in. 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. Call in and get your question or comment in for Trent Horn. So, Trent, what I was saying, though, is that I think when it comes to morality, a lot of people think of Catholic teaching as one big no, right? Like, no, you just can't do this. It's just, we're here to kill your fun. We know that you would really enjoy doing all of those things, but we just want to stop you. And that's really not the case when it comes down to it, is it?
No, not at all. I would say that Catholic morality understands who we are as men and women created in the image and likeness of God. So because we're created in God's image, there's things we naturally desire. There are good things that we should pursue. But because of sin, because of our innate desires to tend towards sin, things like concupiscence, because of a weakness in the flesh, we're tempted to do bad things. And everybody agrees that we're tempted to do bad things. We should avoid the bad or evil and pursue the good. That's something we all agree on. Where we disagree is where that might apply in certain areas. And so in the Catholic faith, people see things as, oh, the teachings on sexuality are just a bunch of no's. I like to think that maybe you're looking at the glass half empty. Because when I see that, I see the Catholic Church is saying you should fully give yourself to your spouse, for example, and hold nothing back, where someone else may look at that and see you can't use contraception, you can't have an open marriage, you can't get a divorce whenever you please for any circumstance. So it's funny how if you look at something, depending on the attitude you take to it, are you going to look for the joy in that and see the yes? Or constantly want to see, I want to do things my way, and if it doesn't go my way, then I see a no and I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, as I was studying the Catholic faith, and you and I are both converts, Trent, I noticed one thing about moral teaching, in particular sexual moral teaching of the church. So like contraception and no premarital sex and this sort of thing, things that society looks at and just rolls their eyes. On one hand, this was a big roadblock for me and for others, frankly. Like, well, okay, Catholic teaching, yeah, but the contraception thing, I mean, that's just craziness. I mean, it's this big roadblock. But then after you sort of dig into it and study it, not only for me, but for others, it actually becomes this huge attraction. Like, oh, wow, this is beautiful. And you start studying theology of the body, and it sort of flips. Whereas Catholic moral teaching, and on to some people, to me, indeed, it was a roadblock, then becomes this beautiful, attractive thing. And have you found that? Was that part of your journey as well?
Absolutely. And in my book, Why We Are Catholic, I talk about that in two chapters. One chapter called Why We Cherish Our Sexuality, and another chapter, Why We Protect Marriage. And that when people see these no's, especially on sexual morality, but other morality too, on the life issues, for example, abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, embryonic stem cell research, you know, people say, oh, well, here's these roadblocks. When you see the reasons behind it, you see, oh, well, that does make sense. That it makes sense that there can be a bond between men and women that only God can dissolve, that's unbreakable. That imagine children coming into the world, they don't have to know threat that they'll be aborted, that they can know their mother and father are bonded together for life, to always be there for them and for one another. You know, lifelong sacrificial love, fruitful, life-giving love. Looking in this context, say, okay, that makes sense. The closest analog I could see that where people may not understand Catholic moral teaching, say that this is it's good and beautiful because you see that it is not only good but good for us when we look at our natures, might be to look at the area of diet and exercise and physical healthy living. Someone may say, you know, imagine there is a very popular health group and their main point in life is salvation from temporal evils like sickness, being tired, incapable of interacting. And so they say, in order to live the most healthy lifestyle, you know, eat these foods, exercise this, don't eat processed foods, sugary foods. Here's the bad thing. Someone looks at that, what a bunch of killjoys. No sugar, no processed foods. I don't have to listen to these people. Well, you don't have to listen to them, and you can live your life the other way, but I don't think it's going to find you that true happiness and joy when you're laden down by all these things that are bad for you. And you're going to find the truth one way or another. Well, I would say find the truth in the joyful way that makes you a complete and happy person, whether it's physical health or spiritual health. And spiritual health naturally leads to our physical health because we're not ghosts in the machine. We're not just souls in these body units we pilot. We are bodies. And so the way we live out our lives in our bodies, it matters.
Here's the topic for today. Why do you reject Catholic morality? We're taking questions and comments for Trent Horn about any of those topics. So if you are someone who rejects Catholic morality or some aspect of it, and you would like to either explain why or ask Trent a question about it, here is the number, 888-318-7884. Trent, I love the food analogy. You know, my wife, so gracious, has transformed me from someone who ate very unhealthily, frankly. Like you said, a lot of processed foods, a lot of sugars, a lot of stuff I shouldn't have been eating. And now I eat a lot healthier. I'm not, you know, all there yet. But
And it's funny because you sometimes when you approach that, and it was the same for me as well. It's like, you know, you see these are just killjoys. These are people out to they have an axe to grind against the way I want to live. And so sometimes I'll sit down with my wife and we watch Netflix. I'm just like, oh, my goodness, how many more documentaries are there on here to tell me that what I'm eating is killing me? Like everything on Netflix, like, oh, it's sugar that's killing me. It's dairy that's killing me. Oh, how many things are killing me? You know, but then the way you go through, wait, when I sat down the other day and I didn't have red meat and I had that salad, I did, you know, you had this, that did feel good and I do feel good. And the same thing when you live out a marriage, you say, hey, since we've gotten off hormonal contraception, like we feel better. And now they're using natural family planning, this communication and this intimacy, it's really good. So I think there's a strong parallel there to show that the way we live our lives and moral conduct has bigger ramifications, both physically and also eternally. Because remember that in the moral sphere, it's not just being tired or other physical ailments we have to contend with. If we choose to live our lives how we see fit, then we're ultimately rejecting the good. We're rejecting God. And whether we know it or not, we alienate ourselves from God when we sin, saying, no, I like living life this way. against the my own nature in a sinful way, and that pushes us away from our eternal happiness.
Yeah. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will go to your calls. And again, Trent, when I look back on the stuff that I used to eat, I'm not even attracted to it anymore, right? Like that sugary whatever it is. And I'm like, oh, that it doesn't even taste good anymore. It's like you're transformed into understanding the good in a way that you wouldn't even have seen possible. All right, when we come back, we will go to your calls. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Mark 12, in speaking to chief priests and scribes, Jesus told a parable about a man who planted a vineyard, dug a wine press, and built a tower which he leased out. Later he sent a servant to the tenants to obtain some produce, but they seized and beat him and actually killed his son, whom he had sent later. Jesus then asked his audience how the owner should respond. They answered that he should put those tenants to death and give the operation to others. When he then quoted from Scripture, "The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone," they realized that he considered them the tenants and he was the son. Unknowingly, they had convicted themselves. We need to pray for the wisdom to see those areas where we are quick to condemn others over deeds that we perform time and time again. And then we need to repent. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the show. Don Johnson sitting in for Cy Kellett today. I'm here with Trent Horn. The topic is, why do you reject Catholic morality? Let's go straight to the phones. Greg has called in from Chicago, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Greg, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Very good. Thanks for letting me chat. I do appreciate the thoughtful discussion. I guess my question would be, and this is I don't know that there's a uniformly Catholic opinion on it. It's just, I guess, social teaching with regards to the poor, and there's a lot there. It's a lot of determining what's good or bad for the poor. And I think in the church there's also a divide amongst parishioners between, and of course, the change between Benedict and Francis. There's some thought that Francis is much more of a socialist-friendly pope versus Benedict, who is more conservative. So I guess with regards to treatment of the poor, how do we address that? And what would your opinion be? I guess I would like to know what your opinion is with regards to what is the Catholic Church's stance on social issues and the poor, how to manage and deal with poverty.
Trent Horn.
Sure. Well, I would like to point our listener and all of our listeners to the Catechism, beginning at paragraphs 2443. Is a section on love for the poor. And I think that's important to read through, that a lot of times when we talk about social teaching, sometimes, and our caller alluded to that a bit when it's talking about socialism or ways government would approach a problem like poverty, which is certainly a part of Catholic social teaching. But Catholic social teaching at its whole is the church's teaching about how both individuals and societies should function and operate so that the intrinsic dignity of every human person is respected and the common good of society is achieved, so that people's rights are protected, the right to life, the right to own property, the right to raise children, to enter into marriage, to practice one's faith. So those rights are protected, and also society is functioning in a way so one can live out and flourish, so that there's access to things like food, medicine. You live in a secure area, safe from the threat of war or crime, or at least excessive crime, and things like that. So that would be Catholic social teaching in a nutshell. And there's many, many elements that go into that to talk about, well, how ought we to achieve that? And when it comes to helping the poor, there are two elements we should look at. One would be individual responsibility. Actually, let me read from the Catechism on this point. Paragraph 2444 says, "The Church's love for the poor is a part of her constant tradition. This love is inspired by the Gospel of the Beatitudes, of the poverty of Jesus, and of his concern for the poor." That when you read the Gospels, Jesus time and time and time again talks about the need to help the poor, and that was a distinctly Jewish ethic from the Old Testament. And he spoke about those who exploited the poor, which is very common in the ancient world. Now, we do have to be careful about when Jesus talks about the poor, what do we mean by that? For example, in the modern world, the poverty Jesus was understood would be closer to something what we would call things like third world poverty. People who there's poverty, lack of access to certain basic necessities. The most extreme form of poverty would be the kind of poverty where, and this is common throughout the world, where you lack access to resources you need to live: clean water, food, shelter, medicine. And as both as individuals and as governments, we have responsibilities to help the poor, both at these basic, getting these basic needs to people, as well as helping their continuing dignity and other forms of poverty, like spiritual poverty. So as an individual, people may disagree about how the state ought to combat poverty. People have reasonable disagreements about what state program is best to implement that will lift people out of poverty, and that's a debate Catholics can have. So I think, though, we could focus on, there's that debate, but then there's the simpler point that we all have individual responsibilities as Catholics, as human beings, to help the poor, to give to charitable organizations that help those who are in poverty, to donate our time, talent, and treasure to helping the least among us. So a lot more that we can go into on that, but is that a helpful explanation, at least for a start?
Sure, then that's a start, and that basically just defines that, well, we're Catholic and we're ethical and we try and do good and not do bad. But, I've heard it, my whole life, and I've seen nothing but bad things and poverty created by government policy. And I know that the Church doesn't want to get into politics and so forth, but I find it...
I need to jump in on that. Actually, the Church does speak about politics in its own documents on social teaching. Pope Leo XIII, for example, in Rerum Novarum, in an encyclical written at the turn of the 19th century, very powerful teaching on social justice, on Catholic social teaching, a condemnation of communism and socialism, that the Church stands against the idea that individuals do not have a right to property, for example, or a right to educate their own children. And this is a time in the 19th century when workers, before the rise of unions, were being mercilessly exploited by employers. And so many of them were tempted to turn towards Marxism, other forms of socialism. And so the Church has stood stalwartly against the idea of socialism. But it's also preaches against the excesses of capitalism, which is, the idea that some people think, well, as long as we have capitalism, the poor will be lifted out of poverty, and it absolves my personal responsibility to help. That would be the other extreme. So the Church is trying to walk the line between, socialism suffocating people and who is the Adam's invisible hand? the invisible hand of the free market, Adam Smith, the invisible hand of the free market, strangling the poor to death. So the church tries to walk a line between those two things. I'd recommend for our caller, if you'd like to learn more about Catholic social teaching, to get a copy of the Compendium of the Social Doctrine of the Church. It's a great one-volume resource on that subject. It's called the Compendium of the Social Doctrine of the Church. And hope you'll call back if you have any other questions.
Appreciate it, Greg. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Anonymous, listening on the EWTN app. Anonymous, welcome to Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn.
Thanks, Jen. Appreciate you taking my call. Okay, so two primary concerns that stem from one common problem. Essentially, first of all, we know that St. Paul speaks of occasional abstinence between a husband and wife, correct? I don't have the verse up at the moment. I apologize.
In his letter to the Corinthians, he speaks about how husband and wife should not prolong their abstinence unless they have a very good reason for doing so.
Okay, so that's yes. Thank you for clarifying that. All right, so my wife and I are struggling a bit right now because we're looking into the church's teachings on acceptable practices. We understand clearly contraception is out the window. Not to be overly graphic, I don't know if this is a graphic reference, but the pull-out method is one thing that's been debated.
Yes. For the continuing of our conversation, to keep this as G-rated as possible, we'll call it Interruptus.
Interruptus. Okay. Very good.
Let's call it that. That our more mature listeners know what we're referring to, and if children happen to be listening, no need to scandalize tender ears. So your question is about the use of Interruptus for planning children, the spacing of births, things like that?
Well, the primary concern being in the event that the wife would not be able to afford health-wise another pregnancy, mm-hmm. That she could not take a chance at the failure of NFP. On the other hand, that if they were to abstain, which I understand is a laudable practice, mm-hmm. that essentially it would then have to go on so long that the couple may begin to suffer from distance.
Right, sure. Well, first, I would say the church's teaching on contraception includes not just things that use the use of devices that have been created, things like latex condoms or hormonal contraceptives or things like that. Contraception has existed since human beings came together as husband and wife. People have discovered alligator skin condoms in ancient Egypt. In fact, the particular method of contraception you're describing, Interruptus, is actually mentioned in Scripture in Genesis 38. When Onan, who as part of the Levirate marriage, the Jewish tradition where you married your deceased brother's wife to have children in his name, he did not want to sire children in his brother's name. So to get around that, he practiced Interruptus with his wife, and Scripture says that God was so displeased by this, God struck Onan dead for doing so. So that would be a use of contraception because the marital act is not brought to its natural completion. It's intentionally misdirected. And so that would fall under the grave sin of contraception. So the use of that would be contraceptive, would be sinful. Now, when it comes to the issue of health, a woman's health, this is actually an issue that I'm familiar with on a personal level. I have a good friend and a close relative, both of whom experienced severe medical complications after the birth of a child. One was actually rendered clinically dead and brought back to life, and the other actually had a stroke shortly after childbirth. Both have to be extremely careful and watchful. They're open to children, but because of these conditions, future pregnancies could be very dangerous. But both of them still practice NFP. And what they do is that, they are very conservative about it, that, they don't, when you practice natural family planning, there are certain infertile days that are definite, others, may be chancing it. They stick to the definite ones, and it's still very reliable for them. So I'd recommend looking into these different methods and going to a place like the Pope Paul VI Institute. I firmly am empathetic, and I've seen firsthand what one has to go through to avoid a health problem. But I will say to this that the answer isn't contraception, because I would say that any method one uses, if you engage in sexual intimacy, is there's going to be a margin of, well, with contraception, there's that margin. There's always a failure rate for contraception. And natural family planning, you know, there are surprise pregnancies. God may bless you with a child anyways. But that does not justify us using a gravely sinful mean to avoid a negative consequence. So check that out, or visit our friend Jason Everett's website, chastityproject.com, to learn more on those issues.
Thanks for the call, Anonymous. Why do you reject Catholic morality is the topic. You're with Trent Horn, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
I was raised in an Italian Catholic home. We went to church. That's what you did. And now that I'm older, I can't thank my parents enough for allowing me to know about our Lord. Because ultimately, the base that they gave me kept pulling me back to the Catholic Church, even though I wandered as a young adult.
The Doctor is In with Ray Guarendi. Weekdays, 1 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
As legend tells it, 500 years ago, a disaffected Augustinian priest nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral. The evidence that he actually did this is pretty thin, but Martin Luther's objections to Catholic teachings concerning purgatory and indulgences set off a series of countless ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. The faithful Catholic wants to be God's instrument in healing these ruptures, but may not know where to begin. Join us this September 28th to 30th as we tackle the topic at Catholic Answers' 4th National Apologetics Conference, the Reunion of All Christians, a lively and inspiring conference designed to ignite and inform your faith. We've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. This is an event you don't want to miss. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to leave you wanting more. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. My name is Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett today. We're here with Trent Horn. The topic is, why do you reject Catholic morality? And I have in my hand, I'm going to show it for the screen there, a beautiful magazine called Catholic Answers Magazine. And we are in the midst of our annual Catholic Answers Magazine subscription drive. This I would highly recommend. There's some beautiful articles in this in the most recent edition, Fatima at 100. We've got the case for the death penalty, which may be of interest to those of you who are calling it today, since we're talking about things of the moral that the Catholic Church that you think is immoral. We've also got Against Wimpy Evangelization, a lot of great articles. I know that, Trent, you have written for that magazine. And if you call now and subscribe for a one-year subscription, you will get $10 off the normal price. If you do a two-year subscription, we'll actually drop the price $20. And get this, you get a Catholic Answers flash drive containing five exclusive talks from top-line apologists such as Christopher Check, our very own Trent Horn, Carlo Broussard, and several others. That seems to me that flash drive is probably worth the price of the subscription right there. So call now, get your subscription to the Catholic Answers magazine. All right, as I said, the topic is, why do you reject Catholic morality? We are prioritizing calls from people who object to Catholic morality. So it's one of those calls where if you're skeptical about something that the Catholic Church teaches, now is your chance to either call and tell us why or ask Trent Horn a question. Let's go to Kim, listening in my home in native land, Canada, on the Catholic Answers app. Kim, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, thank you so much for taking my question. My question revolves around homosexuality and the redefinition of marriage. And putting aside the political arguments and even the moral arguments of whether homosexuality is a sin or not, but as a practicing Catholic, if I accept all of that and the teachings of the church, how am I called to show love and compassion and friendship to people who are living a homosexual lifestyle, or, you know, deciding to go ahead with gay marriage? And I was listening to a video from you guys that was saying, you know, we shouldn't attend a gay marriage of a friend or family member. And so I'd like to know sort of ways that we can have a friendship so that we're there at the table to evangelize when the opportunity presents itself, but also where to draw the line. And when we look at things like people who are going to be living common law, am I not to go to their housewarming party? People who are getting married outside of the church or just in a civil ceremony, like where is the line? And then specifically with regards to homosexual unions, how can we be there and show friendship and love and compassion without crossing lines as a practicing Catholic?
Let me take two aspects to your question. Well, actually, first I'd summarize it in this way. Just the same as we would anyone else, Catholic or not Catholic, what we should do is look at the person, recognize their dignity, their creation in the image and likeness of God, that God has a plan for them, desires to spend eternity with them, and that we have a duty to share with them the gospel of Jesus Christ, to share with them the good news of God's plan of salvation. To do this both in words, but also with acts of charity and love and other things like that. And so we are called to offer this, and not just to say, you know, we're only looking to save people. I got to get people saved. No, we should genuinely care about others and love them. And to love them means to seek the good for that person. So we should seek their good without causing greater evils. And in particular, with those who lead lifestyles or practice sexual behaviors that are gravely evil or are disordered, there's the evil of scandal that can arise. And so the line we have to walk is, how do we show this person love, provide the good for them without causing scandal? And for me, the best example of that would be to go to the Gospels. How did Jesus do that when he spoke to the Samaritan woman who was married multiple times or has a husband that is not her valid husband, is living in a state of adultery? When Jesus was speaking to the tax collectors, you know, these were people who were economic exploitators. They were true villains in the land of Israel, stealing from people, reducing people to destitute poverty. What did Jesus do? And what he did, he didn't just shun them. He didn't just say, I'm not talking to you people ever. Not at all. No. He spent time with them. He got to know who they were. And he made offers to them and appealed to their nobility and goodness. He asked the tax collector, for example, Zacchaeus, to return. Zacchaeus, actually, upon just seeing Jesus, was overwhelmed by Christ and promised to repay what he had stolen from others. And Jesus says, and salvation has come to this house. He offered grace to the Samaritan woman at the well who was involved in sexual immorality. So choosing to be present with someone, to spend time with them, offering to help them if they are in need, for example. If you have a same-sex couple, for example, that's in dire straits, they need help. They're going to be evicted from their home. They're going to be homeless, for example. Say, well, hey, I'll help you guys find some housing. Now, I would try to offer, hopefully, separate housing, but at least to try to provide for someone if they're lacking material means, and be willing to do that, whatever stage they're at in life. So we should do that, but at the same time, avoiding scandal. So Jesus, for example, would not have just gone off with the tax collector and stood by him while he stole money from people, or, you know, gone to a wedding where someone is getting married who's already married to somebody else. And that's for us then as Catholics, we don't want to engage in things that will make people think we think the behavior, there's nothing wrong with it, but we do want to help the person where they're at. I have one more practical tip, Kim, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts. For example, take the wedding. How could we reach out to someone? I would say even if you can't attend a ceremony, you could send a gift, not necessarily a gift addressed to the couple, but you could send a gift addressed to each person, and that acknowledges their goodness as individuals their intrinsic dignity without necessarily implicitly showing that you support this particular union they've entered into. So that might be one example, and there's others more we could get into. But do you see what I'm going at from here?
I do, and that's very useful what you mentioned about scandal and not appearing to say that it's okay what's going on. So I think I just need to sort of think through examples in my life and things that are coming up. Could you comment on the one that I said about a couple who could be living common law and they're having a housewarming party?
Oh, yes, other kinds of marriages. Well, there isn't a hard and fast rule about, and you could go to our website, catholic.com, and I think you could just search for, can I attend the wedding? And there is not a hard and fast rule about which weddings would be scandalous to attend and which would not. For example, let's say you have a couple who's getting married who, you know, they're getting married outside of the church, for example. They're a Catholic couple. They have no impediments, but they're getting married on the beach, you know, with, I don't know, their Star Wars Elvis impersonator. Star Wars impersonator is the person who's the minister of the celebration, in the sense that it's a non-Catholic wedding, and so that would not be a valid marriage because it lacks canonical form. But if you were a family member, you could make a case you don't want to sever ties from this family. That, well, if you're a close relative family member, you could make the case, well, if I go, I'm not going, the scandal that might be caused is outweighed in that I'm maintaining this relationship. And this particular situation, a Catholic couple getting married outside of the church, it can be remedied. The couple would just have to have a convalidation. They'd have to have a ceremony to show they're married in the church. And so that situation can be remedied. Whereas other kinds of marital situations, you know, someone who's marrying a person of the same sex, someone who's marrying a very close relative, there are other kinds of situations where the impediment can't be removed. And so it can't be remedied. You could never take a same-sex couple. What they have, I mean, the church, that's not even an invalid marriage. It's not marriage, because at marriage's core, it's the union of a man and woman. So that situation could never be remedied to become a valid marriage. And so attending that kind of wedding, I think, would just simply cause scandal, and it wouldn't be justified to do so. But you could still maintain a goodwill relationship towards the individuals in that union, and to be charitable towards them in your interactions. I'd also recommend a good book that is being released in 2 weeks, a new book by my friend Daniel Mattson. He has a great insight on a lot of these issues. He identifies as having deep-seated same-sex attractions, and he just wrote a book called Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace, by Daniel Mattson, M-A-T-T-S-O-N, published by Ignatius Press, will come out in 2 weeks. At least that's what I'm seeing here on Amazon. So you might want to check that out as well. But thank you so much for calling in. If you have any other questions, do call back, and we'd love to answer them for you.
Appreciate it, Kim. Thank you very much. The topic today is, why do you reject Catholic morality? We're with Trent Horn. 888-318-7884 is the number. Seth from Columbus, Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio. Seth, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, so, Trent, I'm a big fan. I have all of your books, except for your latest one. Poor college student. Anyway.
That's only a venial sin.
It's no excuse. Order it right now. Come on.
Only venial, so you're fine. But go ahead.
So, Trent, on your Facebook page last week, something came up, and you didn't really have a full response, obviously, because you're not on Facebook all day. It was about the immorality of taxation.
Yeah.
I remember someone brought it up, and this is something I kind of struggle with, because I am Catholic. I accept the teaching of the church, but this doesn't really make sense to me. It seems like every justification for taxation that I hear from other Catholics is one out of need, which seems like utilitarianism, like, oh, we need it for the military or the roads. But that doesn't really answer the question of, is it okay to take money from other people if they don't want you to, and how all that works. Is there any way you want to elaborate on that to help me understand?
Sure. Well, first I would say just what the church teaches. The church recognizes the general legitimacy of the idea of taxation, which is the idea that government or a social situation that you live in has a right to take some money or earnings to take. I mean, there's different kinds of taxes, obviously, property tax, sales tax. We'll just talk about income tax to make it simple. So if I work and I'm paid a wage, some of that can be garnished by the state to use to promote the common good of the society that I live in. So if you look, for example, at paragraph 2240 in the Catechism, it says that submission to authority and co-responsibility for the common good make it morally obligatory to pay taxes, to exercise the right to vote, and to defend one's country. So the justification that's given there is one that we are morally obligated to submit to rightful authority over us. That if there is an authority that rightfully exists, we ought to submit to it. Doesn't mean blindly. If authority oversteps its bounds or acts unjustly, we're called to act against that or stand against that. It reminds me in Acts 5:29 when St. Peter said to the Sanhedrin, the authorities of the time, that Jesus even said to obey in certain circumstances, told the apostles they couldn't preach in the name of Jesus. And Peter had to disobey the authority on that case because he said in Acts 5:29, we have to obey God rather than men. Taxes in general, the church recognizes legitimacy to it, but there are limits to that. The state can't just tax however it wants. If you look at Mater et Magistra, which is an encyclical from Pope John the 23rd, paragraph 132 says, in a system of taxation based on justice and equity, it is fundamental that the burdens be proportioned to the capacity of the people contributing. So there is a general moral obligation to pay taxes, but that doesn't mean the state has the right to levy any kind of tax it wants. Unfortunately, we're going to have to come up to a break here, but I would enjoy holding you on till after the break to continue our discussion about the justness involved in this. So would you be able to do that for us, Seth?
I actually had a couple of follow-up questions, so that works.
Okay, let's do that then. That would be great.
All right, thank you, Seth. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. Why do you reject Catholic morality? We have Trent Horn for both hours, so queue up and get your questions and comments ready, and we will be right back after this.
We'll be right back with more great answers from Trent today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers, and I have a question for you. What if there were an easy and regular way for you to get better month by month and year by year at defending your faith? What if this way were inexpensive and delivered right to your home? There is. It's called Catholic Answers Magazine, and each issue is a lively and engaging lesson in apologetics and evangelization. And right now, we are holding our annual subscription drive so you can save big off the regular price. Subscribe today at 818-487-2011 or online at Catholic.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the regular price. But wait, there's more. Subscribe for 2 years and we'll cut $20 off the regular price and send you a customized Catholic Answers flash drive containing audio lectures from Tim Staples, Carlo Broussard, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, and a talk from me on one of my favorite saints, Catherine of Siena. That's a savings of $20 plus 5 brand new audio presentations when you sign up for a 2-year subscription to Catholic Answers Magazine at 818-487-2011 or Catholic.com today.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
888-318-7884. My name's Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett. The topic today, why do you reject Catholic morality? We are prioritizing calls from people who have issues with what the church teaches regarding morality. We have Trent Horn with us for both hours. Trent, during the break, I just found out you are doing one of my favorite things coming up next year, and that is hosting a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. You got to tell the folks about this.
That's right. So next Easter, I'm going to be leading a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. It's going to be March 23rd through April 3rd, 2018. So we're going to spend Easter in Israel. We're going to go up to Nazareth, to Galilee, to Bethlehem, to all of the famous, you know, to the most famous sites in the Holy Land. And then during the Easter Triduum, we're going to spend that in Jerusalem. We'll be in the Upper Room on Holy Thursday. We'll do Stations of the Cross on Good Friday on the Via Dolorosa and celebrate Mass in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre where Jesus' tomb is. So it's going to be a wonderful experience. I'm going to give lots of talks about how to grow deeper in your faith, talks on how to defend the faith, talk about how to dive deeper into Scripture and these places that we're going to. So if our listeners want to learn more, if they'd like to sign up, they can go to the website holyland2018.com. That's holyland2018.com. It's limited space, and we already have a few signups. And those who do sign up soon, they'll get $100 off if they are the first 20 people. So if you want to learn more, go to holyland2018.com, and hopefully I'll see you next Easter.
Oh, if you've never done that, I can't encourage that enough. That is an absolutely life-changing experience. And to go with Trent Horn, I mean, what could be better? So go check that out. All right, before the break, we were talking with Seth in Columbus, Ohio, and he had some questions about tax laws, and we were going to continue that conversation. Seth, welcome back to the show. You want to summarize your question briefly for Trent again?
Sure. I guess it was just a question of whether... question on the teachings of the church in regards to taxation. It seems, especially what Trent just said, that it's legitimized in certain situations and it can be abused, obviously. My question is, why is taxes moral at all? Because the way I see it is any taking of someone's money, even if it's for good things or things we need, that doesn't make it okay because the ends don't justify the means. So I guess following up with what you said is, would you say taking something from someone else isn't inherently wrong? Would that be a fair way to put it or no?
Absolutely. That obviously government does not have the authority to commit intrinsically evil acts to promote the common good, such as promoting abortion or contraception, especially forced abortion or sterilization, as certain countries do. But government does have the authority to do things that private citizens cannot do because they have a different kind of authority. For example, they have the authority to take someone and put them in a cell or deprive them of their freedom. Like, if Don is just really annoying me or if he takes something from me, I can't just lock him in the spare guest room in my house as punishment for a month. That's kidnapping.
That was terrible the last time you did that, Trent.
Hey, you had room and board, my friend, room and board. So that would be kidnapping if I do it. Because I see the argument people make, Seth. It's, well, if I go to your house and I take you have your, let's say you got $500, your boss paid you, and I go over there and I take $50, that's stealing. But the government, it's not stealing if they do it, it's taxes. Well, that'd be like saying, if I locked on up in my guest room, that's kidnapping. Even if he did something really bad to me, I still couldn't do that. But the state, if Don does something really bad, can take him and lock him up for a month. Well, why do they get to do that? And that would be because the state has a different kind of authority. Also, the point you mentioned, well, is taking something from someone intrinsically wrong? No. I mean, here's an example. You're at a party with a friend, and they have a few too many glasses of wine, and they're getting all tipsy, and they're going to drive home. And you say, buddy, you've had too much to drink. I'm driving home. I'm fine. I'm going to go home. And you see their keys are on the counter, and you decide the only way to keep him from driving home is to take those keys and hide them. That would be just. That would be just to do that, because what you're doing is this person does not have a right to use their property to cause harm in this way. It's not theft. So when we get into this, theft would be the unlawful or immoral taking of someone else's property. But if someone has authority, like the state, if the state has authority to do things we can't do in order to provide for the common good, that human beings, because we're social animals, so there's a natural law argument and a biblical argument you can make for things like taxes. Natural law, as human beings, we're social animals. You know, if man, no man is an island, if you spend all your time by yourself, you end up like Tom Hanks in Castaway, and you have a volleyball as your best friend. We need each other. The problem is, though, when humans get together in groups, we get on each other's nerves, and sometimes, really seriously, we can cause each other harm. So we need laws to restrain desires we have that can hurt one another. And if we break the laws, we need an overarching authority to implement them so we can live in peace and harmony. And that's the role of the state. And so the state includes not just laws that keep us from doing X, Y, Z to one another, but the state provides things for us in order to flourish. And you mentioned this earlier, road, military, medicine, education, things like that. The biblical argument would come from Romans chapter 13, where St. Paul recognizes this as a theological truth. He says in Romans 13:1, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God." So the reason there are authorities, civil authorities, is God has made it so that they do exist, so that we can live in peace and harmony, and so that the gospel can be shared with other people. So do you see the where I'm coming at about where this rightful authority would come from?
Can I just make a couple more points on that?
How about one more point because we're running near the end of the show. How about one point, and then I'll happy to respond.
Sure. So what would you think of people who there are people they're called anarcho-capitalists who believe that things like military and roads could be provided sufficiently by the free market? Is it un-Catholic to be in that party, or is that an okay party to be in if you truly believe that?
Well, I would say that if one was working to undermine the very essence of government at all, so you're saying anarcho-capitalist, like anarchists, like promoting the idea there shouldn't be a state at all, like a stateless society?
Right, but it would be in a peaceful way. It wouldn't be like a violent overthrow. It's a gradual
process. We could all live together. There's no governing authority. So that not only would there not be taxation, there wouldn't be prisons or courts or things like that.
Well, it could be. They would just be privatized, obviously. I'm not
right, but then the problem is then you'd have a privatized justice system. You would have the thing is, I don't know. What's so hard there is people can one, I would say I don't think a Catholic could support that, given what the church has taught in its social teaching about the need for government to provide for the common good and respect people's rights. And also, I think just from a practical element, I'm not aware of any of a large-scale anarchist community functioning well at all. I think that it's just within human nature when people get together. Once you get a large enough group of people, they're going to create some kind of de facto form of government. They're all going to get together, and you can try to privatize things, but then people are going to want to make decisions that affect everybody else, and you may not want everybody involved in the decision, so you're going to have leaders to do this, and then they're going to need some kind of authority, and who's going to decide if I make a contract with so-and-so and the other person breaks it, who decides, measures out who acted justly or unjustly? It's just within our human nature to create ordered society, government, and things like this. And I don't think those who try to describe anarchism, it really tries to overthrow the idea of a very idea fundamental to human nature. So I just don't think it could even work in general. So I'd recommend, as I did to a previous caller, the compendium of the church's teaching on social doctrine be a great resource on that. But just because the state has the authority to do things like levy taxes, we still have the responsibility to make sure, is the state using taxes justly or unjustly? If they're promoting evils like abortion or an unjust war, we should use the democratic process to say, no, I'm going to vote to change so that money is not being spent towards these evil things. So while the state has this authority, it's not unlimited, and we have a duty to participate in the civil sphere to make sure the common good is protected and individual rights are protected.
All right, we appreciate the call, Seth, and that answer, Trent, 888-318-7884. Why do you reject Catholic morality? We're going to keep this going for another hour. Trent is staying with us. So if you have an objection to Catholic moral teaching, now's your chance. 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back after this.